Right. Good morning. Happy Mother's Day to you, some of you, the moms that are celebrating. It's a great day. A lot of you, man, a lot of people are coming to church with their mom this morning because it's full, right? It's full. It's good to see you. If you're online, we're glad you're there. A couple things I want to mention real quickly before we jump in. One, I want to mention the homecoming weekend that Pastor Marcia talked about. Just so everyone, we want to say it as much as we can. That's a 10 o'clock combined service outside. So some of you just aim for 9:30. It will work out just fine. But if you're aiming for 11, is going to be a problem, and we'll have limited seating too. So if you have chairs or blankets, something like that, bring that along. Just make sure we've got places for everyone to sit. Also, I know this is a day about moms, but I want something for the guys because I want you to save the date, September 2nd and 3rd. It's a Friday and Saturday. We're planning a men's camp out. Now, so we're clear, this is for all guys, right? So fathers, you can bring your sons. If you're like me, you can just come and you don't have to take care of any kids, which is kind of cool if you got daughters. Right? It's a good gig for us. But it's going to be all ages of men, just a time to get together. It'll go from like Friday evening until sometimes Saturday afternoon. And that's the Labor Day weekend, Friday into Saturday. So save that date. Just to be real clear, this is not a drop your kids off thing. All right? Don't drop your kids off in the woods back there and think you're heading home for the weekend. You got to stay with them. So that's going to be fun. We're planning that. We're in a series called Under Pressure. We've been talking about the stress and the conflict and forgiveness. And we're going to be talking about trauma in our lives, and stress is really an interesting concept. I was thinking about it as I was writing this because I don't think anyone actually wants to be stressed. Now, some people have a habit of making decisions that are going to lead them to being stressed, but I don't know anyone that's like, yeah, I love being stressed. That's the goal. That's what I'm aiming for. But at the same time, it's something a lot of people like to brag about. At least on the surface, they like to brag about being stressed. A lot of times it seems to me that being stressed is kind of like showing the receipts for how hard we're working. So we put that out there. Somebody say, how's it going? We're like, oh man, it's good. It's busy, you know? I mean, we were at kids sports 6 nights last week and I put 60 hours in the office. We repainted the entire downstairs last week and man, marathon training is really starting to get intense. And we hear that and we're like, wow, man, you're doing a lot. That sounds good to a lot of people. For whatever reason, we think that sounds better than, I got 8 hours of sleep every night last week and I made it home for every dinner with the family. I actually told my kids they couldn't do every single activity that they want. I feel great. For some reason, this sounds better than this to some of us. And so because of the cultural glorification of busyness and stress, we find ourselves more and more under pressure to say yes to everything and to be everything to everyone who wants us to be it. There's a better way to live. There's a better way to manage the stress in our lives. And we're going to talk about that today. And the main point this morning is that in order to effectively manage the stress in our lives, it requires both practical and spiritual approaches. We're going to have to come at this from two areas, right? We have to come at it practically and spiritually. And you can do all of one and none of the other. You can try that, but it will not go as well as if you come at this from both directions. And I think just in general, Christ followers, we should get that kind of principle. We should understand that if you're sick, we will pray and ask that God will heal you. We will ask God to do what only He can do. We know that He can. We believe that He can. We'll ask Him for that. But you should also go to the doctor. And you should follow the course of treatment that they advise. You need to approach it from both practical and spiritual directions. If you're struggling to parent a child, you should ask God to intervene. You should pray that God will give you love and grace and patience for that child and pray that God will mend the relationship. But you shouldn't just do that and say, okay, good, I've done what I can do. You should read some books on pertinent subjects. You should sit down with a counselor either together or separately. You should take every practical step that you can to improve the situation. And so as we talk about managing stress, we're going to look at five things. Two of them are decidedly practical. Two of them are clearly spiritual. There's one that's kind of in the middle, and it fits both sides. And we're going to start with the practical application. So if you're struggling to manage the stress in your life, you need to make sure that you run a sustainable pace. Now, that's a phrase we use a lot in our house, the idea of running a sustainable pace, because you can run an unsustainable pace for a bit, but you can't do it for too long. You can't do it forever. The first 5K that I did was in Letchworth, and I grew up in that area, so I don't know why I believed it when it said a flat course. That was in the description, a flat course, and I was like, I can't wait to see what part of Letchworth this is in, right? It was not a flat course, and so it started. And if you've ever done a race, you know you've got everyone around you, and so there's a lot of energy, there's a lot of excitement, and the first mile was straight downhill, and I was flying. I was like, this is awesome. And then in my headphones, it gave me the 1 mile time, and it was like 2 minutes faster than I had been running miles up until that point, and I had that feeling of like, oh, this is going to end badly, right? This is not good. I knew that I was not going to be able to keep doing what I was doing for very long, and that's a terrible feeling. Some of you know that feeling in life. We need to make sure we're running a sustainable pace. Yes, there are times where you have to push harder than you really can for a bit, but you cannot do that forever. You can't do it forever. The senior pastor at my first job, he's one of my heroes. I loved him. He is a huge reason why I'm a pastor. I never saw myself as that. And he looked at me and said, you've got what it takes. And I was like, I don't know if you know what you're talking about. But he was a huge part of getting me into ministry. But he had this firm belief that pastors need to work 60 to 70 hours a week was his target date and or rate. And he was doing that. And he worked himself so hard. And he gave himself to that church. And he really broke himself for that church. And I remember sitting in his office as he was reading the letter that he was leaving on a sabbatical, ultimately to resign, and he was broken. And I remember just being devastated for him, but also thinking, man, you didn't run a sustainable pace. You didn't do something that you can keep doing for a long time. So for me, you know, I want to run a sustainable pace. I've worked for churches since I was 19. I've been a pastor since I was 24. Very few have the honor of being a pastor for the entire span of their working years. But unless God changes my call, that's my goal. That's what I'm aiming for. So would there be value in just destroying myself for the church for a while and being out of ministry at 45? I mean, some people would think so. Some churches value that too greatly. But we want to be an example of people working at a healthy pace and loving our families well and running a sustainable pace. And there's actually a great example of this in the Bible. Now, it's a little bit longer than I'd normally use for one point, but I love that it's in the Bible. I think there's so much wisdom in this account. So we're going to look at this from Exodus. Now, in Exodus, Moses is running the show, right? They're in the desert. They're at that whole chapter of life. And he's trying to lead the people well. I mean, he's trying to do what God has called him to do, but he's not doing it efficiently. He's not doing it at a sustainable pace. So let's look at these verses. Exodus 18, 13 to 14. The next day, Moses took his seat to serve as judge for the people, and they stood around him from morning till evening. When his father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he said, "What is this you're doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as judge while all these people stand around you from morning till evening?" Now, there are naturally in this group of people, there are some disputes among the people. And Moses is the only person that has the credibility and the authority to serve as judge over these matters, so that's what he's doing. And his father-in-law, Jethro, he gets there, and he sees what Moses is doing, and he's got some questions. He's like, I got to ask you a couple things, Moses. He's like, hold up, you do this job by yourself, just you. You handle every single dispute by yourself. You need a staff or something. And Moses is like, a staff? And he's like, no, like a team. You need a team. There's something around 2 million Israelites at that time. So he basically has 2 million direct reports. That would go against all current organizational chart logic and understanding, right? It just doesn't make sense. It's too many people. So Jethro makes him answer for this in the next couple verses, 15 and 16. Moses answered him, because the people come to me to seek God's will. Whenever they have a dispute, it is brought to me, and I decide between the parties and inform them of God's decrees and instructions. Moses' response is a lot like some of us when we're stressed. He's asked, why do you do it this way? And he says, I'm just doing what everyone asked me to do. I'm doing what everyone else expects me to do. And Jethro, he lovingly drops this truth hammer on him in the next couple verses. Moses' father-in-law replied, what you are doing is not good. It's a great sentence. You and these people who come to you will only wear yourselves out. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone. She's like, it's not good. This isn't good, man. You're going to wear yourself out. You can't do this all on your own. Jethro says, Moses, you are running an unsustainable pace. And that resonates a lot with some of you today. You would love for someone to look at you and to recognize the same thing in your life, to say, the work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone. You're going to wear yourself out. And we'll talk about that in a bit. Moving on to verses 19 to 21, he gives him this advice. He's like, here's what you have to do, Moses. Listen to me, and I will give you some advice, and may God be with you. You must be the people's representative before God and bring their disputes to him. Teach them his decrees and instructions and show them the way they are to live and how they are to behave. But select capable men from all the people, men who fear God, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. It's like, Moses, you're about to have some employee training days, right? We're going to get some people around you. You're going to tell them what they need to know. You're going to show them how to do the job, how to act, how to live. Make sure you select good people. Get the right people around you, Moses, and then empower them to do the job. Take all these people and break them up into manageable sized groups. He goes on in verse 22 to continue the advice. He says, have them serve as judges for the people at all times, but have them bring every difficult case to you. The simple cases they can decide themselves. That will make your load lighter because they will share it with you. If you do this and God so commands, you will be able to stand the strain and all these people will go home satisfied. It's like, instead of hearing every single case, just pluck out the most difficult ones. Have those brought to you. You can do that. That way your time is saved and your wisdom and input is where it is needed the most. Some of these things are basic. You're not going to need to hear every petty thing, Moses. Filter those out and you'll be able to keep going. And the people, they'll be satisfied too. They don't need you involved in every problem either. And so we find out Moses' response. Here's how he handles all this advice. Moses listened to his father-in-law and did everything he said. He chose capable men from all Israel and made them leaders of the people, officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. They served as judges for the people at all times. The difficult cases they brought to Moses, but the simple ones they decided themselves. Moses takes it well. I mean, maybe he's a little offended that his father-in-law just flew in and told him how to do his job. Or maybe he's just relieved that someone looked and realized he wasn't running a sustainable pace. But however it makes him feel, he's smart enough to see the wisdom in it. And he does what Jethro said he should do. He gets the right people in place. He creates this system of smaller, more manageable groups, and he keeps the simple cases off of his desk so he's available for the most difficult ones. Then it wraps up in verse 27. Then Moses sent his father-in-law on his way, and Jethro returned to his own country. Moses is like, all right, pops, we got it. Thanks for your help. We're good. And Moses, as great of a man of God as he was, as great of a leader as he was, Moses had to run a sustainable pace. The same is true for each of us. Many of you have heard me lay this out when we talk about commitments, talk about making commitments, because you can stack commitments up so quick and all of a sudden you look and you've got this whole line of things you're responsible for. But that's the reason I work hard not to stack up those obligations on my calendar. I'm very careful about board invitations, speaking opportunities, things of that nature. Sure, it feels good, right? It feels flattering to be asked. There's something inside of us that makes us feel good when those things come up. But for me, in my mind, I have my family and I have Northgate. I have those two big responsibilities. And if I fail at those two things, it doesn't matter what happens in responsibilities three through whatever number, right? If I fail at these two things, it doesn't matter how good I am over here. This stuff didn't really matter that much. On the other hand, if I succeed at these two things, how does anything number three and beyond matter that much? You know, if I'm the best possible husband to Amy and father to my girls, and I'm the best possible pastor that I can be to all of you, then I don't really care what comes after this. If I get these two things right, I've nailed the test. Now, some of you have been here for a while. You know that I had this distinct honor. It was a blast to spend about 15 months writing a column about the Boston Red Sox online. And some of you hate them. That's fine. It's not pertinent to the story. So just relax. We're terrible this year. I don't want to talk about it. This we're talking about in the past. Now I'm like a Yankees fan. We got to talk about the past, right? So, oh, man, why? That's not in my notes. I don't know. It just happens. 2013, I had the opportunity, I started writing a weekly column about the Red Sox. I was getting paid to watch Red Sox games and to write my thoughts about it, and it was really cool. It was such a great opportunity, and I did it for all of 2013. The Red Sox won a championship that year, which was incredible to be a part of writing about that, and then I started to do it into the 2014 season as well. But at that point, I started to preach every week at our South Campus, like every single week, 44 times in 1 year. And so what I quickly realized was I didn't have the ability to write a good column, to write a good message, and to be a good dad. I couldn't. And so I found myself trying to write the columns at home and like telling the girls like, okay, hey, go have more screen time, right? Because I got to finish this. Or trying to write a column here and like saying, okay, I'll finish the message on Saturday. That doesn't need to be done until Sunday. And I finally had to stop and realize, you know, if I can only do one of these things well, then I'm picking the wrong one. As much as it was fun to write about the Red Sox, it was a dream of mine. I wanted to be a sports columnist growing up. It was something that I had to finally say, okay, I can't do it. It wasn't a sustainable pace to be able to do all of those things, and I had to look and say, as fun as this is not the thing that's going to be the most important. So run a sustainable pace. We have to. But here's where our story differs a bit from the story of Moses, because he had someone come in and see him and observe him and realize that he needed help. Someone else recognized that. And some of you have been waiting for that in your life. You've been struggling. You feel like your head is barely above water and you're just waiting for someone else. Your boss, your spouse, your parents, your friends, you're waiting for someone to notice and say, oh, wow, look at you. Look at you. You need help. Listen, free tip here for the guys. If you're a husband and you're a dad like me, okay, listen, they're not our moms, but we got to carry the load on Mother's Day, right? Because I don't know how old your kids have to be before you can entrust this to them, but my kids are still young enough where they're going to blow it. So hopefully you got a good Mother's Day underway for your wife, right? I understand how that works. It's a weird dynamic. But if you need something, just ask her. Just say, hey, let me ask you this. Do you feel like you're running a sustainable pace right now? And is there anything I can do? Is there anything we can do? Is there help we can get you to make sure that you are running a sustainable pace? It's really important, and I tell you, she would feel seen and valued if you did that, if that was a question that you asked. I hope and I pray that that happens for you, that someone notices that you need help if you need it, that it's just like it was for Moses. But the truth of it is we can't wait for that. We can't wait for that to happen. We can't rely on that because, as many of you know, it's just not going to happen. So the next thing that we need to do to be able to manage our stress is ask for help. I have to run a sustainable pace, and it is no one else's job but mine to say when I am not. I can't just give and give and give and say, oh man, hopefully Pastor Vern notices how hard I'm working and he says something. No, that's not my job, to go to him and say, hey, I don't feel like I'm in a sustainable spot right now. So in a football game, remember football, it's the best. We root for the same team, so that's fun for all of us, right, to do that. You guys like me a little more during football season? It's cool. But you see football players and they tap their helmet, right? They tap their helmet because they're tired and they need a break. They're not waiting for the coach to see them. They're not waiting to say like, man, you've really been slacking these last couple plays. We better pull you out. They're tapping their helmet. They're asking for a break. When the girls were little, I was part-time here, and so I was home on Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays, and Amy was at work all of those days, and a lot of those days she was working 12s, which if you're married to anyone in the medical field or you work in that, you know what that means. It means you're gone all day, right? So she would leave at like 6 in the morning. She'd get home at 8 or so at night. And that's a long day with little kids, man. That's a long day because she was gone when they got up and she was gone when they went back to bed. And it was a long day for her too, not to make it all about me, but it was long. And so I remember one particular time, you know, it was just a real tough couple of days. I think we only had 2 then, but they were like 3 and 1, you know, they're little and it was exhausting. And she'd worked all day Thursday and I got through, and then I barely got through on Friday, and she came home on Friday. I was just so glad that she was there, that I had somebody else. And she said, I think I'm going to have to go in tomorrow. And I said, can we call your parents? She was like, oh yeah, did you have plans? Were you going somewhere? I was like, no, I just can't do another day of this, right? And I knew it. And some of you are like, man, you're weak. I've done like 10 days in a row, and that's cool. You're better than me. But I couldn't. And I knew I had to ask for help. I just knew. I was like, if you go to work again tomorrow, I'm going to need another adult in the house to help me out. Some of you are here today, and you're so stressed. and you feel like you're drowning and you're waiting for someone to notice, but instead of just waiting and silently drowning, you need to yell out and ask for help. And I know none of us like doing that. We don't like doing it. We don't like to show weakness. We don't like to admit vulnerability. I want to tell that story because some of you right now are like, dude, these are your kids, man. You're soft. You're soft. And we want everyone to think that we've got it together and we always rise to the occasion, but that's not always the case, and it's okay. It's okay. Don't let your pride stand in the way of getting you the help that you need. Proverbs 11:2. Oh, I got it right. When pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom. If you let your pride steer the ship, sooner or later you're going to crash into the rocks, but when you can humble yourself, there is great wisdom in that. When you can ask for help, even when it's hard, you're going to start feeling better almost immediately just by being able to admit that you can't do it on your own. Even before you get the help, there's just a relief in being able to say, I can't do this all on my own and I need some help. And I know that some people, you come in here today and you're in a married relationship, you come here with family surrounding you, you've got people who you feel like you could say this to and you feel like they will listen, but there's others that are lacking community. And that's one of the many reasons why we need to very deliberately seek community. We need to seek community to manage our stress. You are not going to get that kind of support in this size group. You're not. We care about you. We do. We have an amazing care team that will pray for you faithfully. They will help coordinate some care for you in very practical ways, but you need a smaller circle than this. You need a team that you serve with, who you get to know. You need a small group that you share life with. You need a community around you who care about you and who know what is going on in your life. One of my favorite directives of Christian community is in Paul's letter to the church in Rome, where he says this in Romans 12:15, rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn. Such a simple verse, but it's one I reference all the time because it's so rich, because he's painting a picture of a community that has dividing and multiplying principles. When we're in a joyful time, when things are good, we feel like that joy is multiplied because of the other people that are sharing in that joy with us. A couple of years ago, I had the opportunity for the first time to speak at chapel at Roberts. And if you've listened to any stories I've told you, I'm not on the alumni of the year list, right? You're not going to see me in any Roberts magazines. And so it was really a huge honor to be asked to come back and speak at chapel. It was something I honestly never thought would happen. And it was really cool. And I was excited to do it. But when I went to speak and I walked out over here, there was like a group of 10 of my coworkers that had come to sit there and to listen to me speak and to support me and to share in the joy with me. And that day, I felt like my joy was multiplied because my people had come to share in that with me. On the other hand, I've thought a lot about coming into the worship services here at Northgate the morning after Emerson got bit by the dog when she was 2. And I felt like our sadness and our brokenness of that time, it was divided because there were so many other people around us carrying that alongside us. And those things are a beautiful picture of what Christian community is supposed to look like, multiplying and dividing principles. So place a premium on that, value it, and seek it. My other favorite directive for Christian community comes from the book of Hebrews, in Hebrews 10:23-25, where it says, let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. If you aren't surrounded by people who are spurring you on towards love and good deeds, if you aren't surrounded by people who are encouraging you, talk to Pastor Marcia. Start building those relationships now, even if you don't feel like you need it right now, because eventually you will, and you will be really glad that you prioritized it before it became an urgent need. So that one, that's a bit practical and a bit spiritual. It's both. So the last two are purely spiritual. And I want to see how they can help us manage stress. If you're feeling worn down, you're feeling weighed down by stress, make worship a priority. Now, sometimes you listen to messages, you're like, man, I got a lot to do, right? I got to live up to. Look, you're doing this one. You did it. This is good. Good for you. You got to check this one off. You're all here. It's really good. You've got that in the bag, and do it again next week, and then keep going. One of the things that happens when we worship is that we turn our heart and our mind and our attention fully towards God. I don't know about you, but as we were singing about how good God has been to us, I didn't feel stressed, Right? I wasn't stressed in the moment. I wasn't thinking about the to-do list and the things I've got to get done or the things that went wrong. I was thinking about God, and I was thinking about God's goodness in my life. When we do that, when we're reminded of who He is, and that no matter how stressful and out of control my life may feel, that He's still in control, that He is still good, that He's still on the throne, and that He is still for me, it does something inside of us that can't really be quantified. Now, this is why we need a two-pronged approach, because you can do this, and you should every single week you're not traveling or sick. But then if you just do that and you walk back out of here and you don't do anything to practically improve your situation, it's not really going to help for that long, right? You need to do a bit of both. In Psalm 61, David expresses this so well. I love this verse. He said, "From the end of the earth I will cry to you. When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I." When my heart is overwhelmed, when my life is more than I can bear, when I'm feeling worn down, when I'm feeling worn out, lead me to the rock. Lead me to the solid foundation of life that's stronger, that is wiser, that is better suited to bear that weight than I am. Because ultimately, David knew something that we know inside, and that's that we can't be Lord over our own life. It has to be bigger than us. It has to be bigger than our problems, our ability to solve and manage our own problems. And that's why Jesus, when he taught his disciples how to pray, he told them, "Start with 'Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name.'" Because when we get that power dynamic right, when we remember which of us is on a throne in heaven and which of us is merely here on earth, it helps us to start putting the problems of our life into their proper perspective. So if you're struggling to manage stress, please make sure to make worship a priority. And also, you have to spend quiet time with God. You've got to spend quiet time with God. And you're saying, "Man, I'm stressed. I'm busy," right? You're telling me I'm busy. Give me one more thing to do. This isn't going to give you something else to do. It's going to give you an opportunity just to be. Just to be with God. You don't need to be checking a box. You don't need to be getting anything done. You don't need to be accomplishing something. You just need to be with God. And this has this really interesting thing. Now, those of us that tithe, we know mathematically it doesn't make sense, right? If you're tithing, you're giving at least 10% of your money back to God, you should have less money. But those of us that have done it for a long time will tell you it doesn't work that way. Somehow it breaks the math. Telling you this is the same thing with your time, where you're saying, "I don't have 15 minutes in my day." I'm telling you, if you make this time a priority, your time will multiply. And I don't know how it makes sense. It doesn't make sense mathematically. It doesn't make sense practically, but God is bigger than that. So spend a couple minutes listening to a worship song. Spend some time reading scripture. Spend a little time in prayer, including time just being quiet before God, as awkward as that may feel. And if you aren't currently doing this, here's my challenge to you. If you're not doing this, do it for 2 weeks. It's 2 weeks. You can do it. You can do it for 2 weeks and just let me know if it affects the stress level in your life. When you see me at the homecoming weekend, if you do it for 2 weeks, come out and just tell me, "Yeah, I might feel like my stress level, it's gone up, it's gone down. I think it's going to be down." I'm telling you, it will affect the stress level in your life. It will reshape and reform your life. It will change. It might not. That's the right way to say it. I don't know, I should have thought of that before. If you start with 15 minutes and you get a chair and you get a place and you spend some quiet time with God, it won't magically make all your stressful situations go away, but I promise you that it will impact you and the stress level you carry into those situations. And that's the picture that Paul paints for the church that he planted in Philippi. He tells them in these verses in Philippians 4, 6 to 7, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." What you need more than a magic wand to solve all your problems is for the peace of God to transcend your understanding, for the peace of God to shape how you look at everything. And you need your heart and your mind to be guarded by Jesus. This is an incredible formula for managing the stress in your life. Because you can do all the practical stuff, and like I said, that stuff will help. I believe that. If you're not a Christian person yet, you're just here because you were invited, because mom likes you to come to church on Mother's Day, you can apply these things and it will help you. But if you leave Jesus out of the equation, you aren't going to get the full picture. You aren't going to truly experience that transcendent peace. You aren't going to get the rest that is offered to those of us that try not to just do it on our own strength, but through the strength that Jesus offers each of us. Because in Matthew's gospel account, he shares these words of Jesus. And when we're stressed, when we're overwhelmed, when we're under pressure and we hear them, they feel like a cup of cold water in a desert. Here's what Jesus says, Matthew 11:28-30. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Jesus is talking to you. He says, if the weight of your life is wearing you down, come to me. I am the place that you will find that rest that you've been desperately searching for. What you're carrying is heavier than what you can carry, but the burden that I'm carrying is light enough that I can carry yours and mine. And when you do that, when you come to me, when you truly trust me, when you turn it over to me, you will find rest for your weary soul. Doesn't that sound good this morning? Because effectively managing the stress in our lives is going to require both practical and spiritual approaches. So do the things that you can do. Be smart about how you approach those things. Run a sustainable pace. Ask for help. Seek community. But then turn it and your life fully over to God. Prioritize worship in your life. Go to the solid rock that is higher than you are. And spend quiet time with God. Take Jesus up on his incredible offer. Come to him, everyone who is weary and burdened, and he will give you rest. Amen. If we know that, if we believe that, if we trust that, then it allows us to take us up or take Jesus up on the invitation that he gives us. Let me give you the takeaway for today, and that's that when we are weary and we are burdened, Jesus invites us to come to him and he promises to give us rest. Take him up on that offer. Seek him, pursue him, follow him, trust him. Go today in the love of God, in the grace of Jesus, and the power of the Holy Spirit. Have a great week, and we will see you next weekend.